You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Wednesday, 13 January. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from MoneyWeb Studios in Houghton, Johannesburg. On the show today, we'll chat with Wayne McCurry. Markets, they had a down day yesterday, but that was after six up days. He was tweeting yesterday, market is expensive. Dugan Matthews, CIO at Marriott, characteristics of a quality dividend-paying company, and the Theresa CEO. I'm interested in their production date, mining under lockdown, but also chrome concentrate and their rhodium. Can they kind of manage where they mine to get better, more rhodium? Because that rhodium price is $18,000. MoneyWeb Now brought to you by Orbvest, a global real estate company that has a hyper-focus on acquiring stable, income-producing medical buildings in the USA. Investors use Orbvest's online platform to invest directly into low-risk commercial real estate, primarily in the healthcare niche in the US, from as little as $5,000. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb, Meritrade International, provisional liquidators appointed. No surprises, but I think the next no surprise will be, I don't think they're going to find anything there. That's one of the points of Bitcoin, is you can make it very much disappear. Business day, liquor industry tells state it wants a tax holiday. Not a bad idea. Of course, the problem is government needs the tax. Liquor industries are worth about 2.5 billion rand a month in excise duty. Government needs that. I don't think the liquor industry is going to get their tax holiday. Morning markets, the US was green. S&P literally a few points, up 0.04%. NASDAQ up 0.3%. Asia green. Sydney, a point, up 0.01%. Tokyo up 0.8%. Commodities on the up, gold at 1860 an ounce, rand a little stronger, 1520, and top 40 opening call, green open, about 0.7% higher.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Wayne McCurry, Senior Portfolio Manager, F&B Wealth and Investments. Wayne, morning. Appreciate your early morning time. I mentioned in the intro there, yesterday was a down day. That after six green days in a row, locally and globally. And truthfully, markets have had a storming start to 2021. But I saw one of your tweets from yesterday, and you're looking at this market and thinking it is crazy expensive, to be quite frank.
Yeah, not our share market. I mean, our share market, if you look at the historical valuation data in our market, it looks incredibly expensive. Mm-hmm. But our earnings have collapsed. So if you make the assumption, and it is an if, mm-hmm. that earnings will return to some sort of long-term average, then our market is maybe 10 or 15% overvalued. Nothing to be massively concerned about. But in the U.S., the historical data is as expensive. It's at a 36 price earnings ratio. Now, the average is about 20 or 22. And it's only been that higher once at the absolute peak of the dot-com bubble in 2002 when it got to about a 40 price earnings ratio. But once again, earnings are also depressed in America, not to mm-hmm. the same extent as here. So if you make the same adjustment and assume that earnings return to some sort of long-term level, the market overseas is still as expensive as what it has ever been in the past. Not nearly, you know, as bad as 2002, but certainly as expensive as previous highs. Now, there's many, many reasons as to why the market's expensive. Probably the biggest single reason is the U.S. long bond rate is so low. So that is the biggest single support for the U.S. share market is the very, very low level of the long bond. But, of course, that could change. I mean, the long bond could go up to, I don't know, maybe 1.5% in the not-too-distant future. And should that occur, then a big support will be pulled out from beneath the U.S. share market. So the point is, be cautious. You know, if you've made a fortune on U.S. shares and you are overweight U.S. shares, take some profits.
Yeah.
You know, just be aware. It is very expensive.
And what we've seen, I mean, the play out of this, I mean, aside from the long bond, I mean, it could just be as we saw in the first decade of the 2000s, where we get a U.S. market that goes nowhere for a decade. It doesn't need to necessarily crash. It can unwind by giving you zero return for the next decade.
Correct. And of course, you know, and another point, I mean, you all know which shares push the US market up to these valuation levels. And I was thinking about this the other day. You know, this reminds me of Y2K. In other words, leading up to Y2K, in those days, they weren't data, they weren't IT companies, they were just called computer companies. But could conditions have been better? In other words, last year, for the technology companies and the online companies and online shopping and social media and Zoom and MS Teams, could conditions have been better? I mean, it's absolutely, literally perfect conditions for these companies to thrive in. Will that occur again this year? It certainly will for a portion of the year. But, you know, it was a perfect storm and the shares went up in the perfect storm. Now, unless you believe that perfect storm is going to reoccur into perpetuity, the valuations are too high.
Yeah, it's that priced for perfection we're seeing in the US. Yes. And you know, if anything slightly wobbles, we're in huge trouble there.
I want to stress that this isn't a dot-com bubble. I mean, these are proper companies with proper earnings and, you know, strong cash flows and balance sheets, but it doesn't mean the share prices can't come down.
Yeah, no, I agree on that 100%. We'll leave that there. Wayne McCurry, Senior Portfolio Manager, FNB Wealth and Investments, with some sage words there. Well, saying it's going to collapse. I'd be saying, man, you need a lot to go very, very right to justify prices. And maybe if you got some giant profits, maybe take some of that profit off the table.
You've worked hard to accumulate wealth, but with these uncertain times, how can you preserve and grow your wealth in a safer place? Offshore, while earning regular quarterly dividends in US dollars. The solution is here. Hundreds of investors from across South Africa are investing in specialized medical real estate in the USA, sourced by a highly skilled team who make it easy for you. Orbvest SA, an authorized FSP. Visit orbvest.com.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
Chatting now with Phoevos Pouroulis. He is, of course, CEO of Theresa. They had some production update out yesterday. That was for the quarter ending December. Phoevos, morning. Really appreciate your time again. Really solid production numbers. I want to delve into a few sort of moving parts, perhaps around the numbers. And the first is that rhodium price. Rhodium still up around $18,000 an ounce. When you're mining PGMs, obviously that basket, are you able to sort of direct your operations to areas of maybe higher rhodium, or is it just going to be a case of this is the stream that you have, and it's almost, I don't want to say luck, but beyond your control as to what amount of rhodium you get from that basket?
Yeah, good morning, Simon, and nice to be on the show again. So, yeah, I think it's a function of the geology and the ground. And so one can't target a specific platinum group metal in your pearl split. And so I think we're fortunate in the fact that our middle group reef horizons contain just short of 10% rhodium in our pearl split. And just out of interest, this morning I was looking at the Hong Kong fix. Rhodium has now hit $20,000 an ounce. I mean, you couldn't have dreamt this a year ago. You know, it's really unprecedented.
I'm sure I have a memory of once seeing rhodium at under 1,000, and we're going way back. I mean, way back. But I mean,
not too far ago, not too long ago. But yeah, below 1,000, correct.
And so you're getting about 10% rhodium, and that is, you know, more or less a bit fudging at the sides, but that is what your reef is more or less delivering, and therefore your expectation going forward.
Correct, yeah. So the geology is pretty consistent. So if you look at the pearl splits, it's, you know, we have around 55% platinum, and it's good to see platinum breaching the $1,000 an ounce mark.
Yeah, yeah.
About 16% palladium, and then obviously importantly, that just shy of 10% rhodium. Which is a real boost to our earnings and margins.
You've got your Vulcan processing plant. That's the chrome concentrate, which is on track to start producing in financial year 22 and onwards. How much is that going to add to your current chrome operations?
Yeah, so it's a unique process that we developed in-house, and we're very excited about the commissioning of that by September this year. That should add around 400,000 tons of chrome concentrate a year to our production. So around a 25% boost. And importantly, it's a type of scavenger plant, so the operating costs are very low in terms of the fact that we're processing a tailing stream that normally would deposit on our waste storage facilities.
And how is chrome traded? I mean, is it a contract trade? Is it a spot market like sort of the other commodities?
So yeah, it doesn't have a exchange traded market. So it's typically on a bilateral basis, and it's mostly on a spot market.
Okay.
Basis. Yeah.
I want to turn quickly to COVID. You mentioned it, naturally, you mentioned it a fair bit in your update of yesterday. It is the story of last year and truthfully going to be of this year. My sense is from your update, from chatting to you with the results a quarter ago, is that, I mean, mining is at its core around safety. And I suppose COVID kind of just added an extra sort of process to that safety. But perhaps in some senses, mining as an industry was better positioned to integrate COVID processes into their operations. Is that a fair comment?
Yeah, I think it is fair, Simon. And what we did last year at the onset of the COVID-19 pandemic was we put in all the precautionary measures. We invested in quarantine facilities and clinics and so forth to manage that sort of potential first wave of infections, mm-hmm. which fortunately didn't transpire. I think of concern now is the infection rate that we're seeing post the festive season, yeah. and people returning and the active cases. So I think just by the nature of safety being a core value of ours and the industry, we were better prepared to deal with, you know, implementing these systems and protocols. Having said that, it still remains a risk in terms of business continuity.
Yeah, I mean,
across the globe, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, most definitely a risk. And I mean, there's obviously cost, and there would have been, you know, you mentioned putting in those initial processes up front, clinics and quarantines and the like. That's a one-off cost. The ongoing cost, I mean, it's a cost you're obviously happy to take because it's protecting staff. Is it significant? I mean, is it an important line item, or is it a cost that a company such as Theresa, who are producing, is able to take quite comfortably?
Yeah, so I think cost is secondary to the health and safety of our employees, and it remains a priority. So I think the cost is not significant when you look at it in the mm-hmm. big picture and in terms of the potential impact that an outbreak could have on an operation. So, yeah, I'm very happy to keep contributing and investing into the health and safety of our employees, yeah.
That's a great point. It's a cost which keeps the operations working. We'll leave it there. Fevus Pyrulis, CEO of Theresa, really appreciate your early morning.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Sitting now with Doug and Matthew, CIO at Marriott, characteristics of quality dividend-paying companies. You know that I love dividends. That's not new here. Doug, good morning. Appreciate your time. Last year, during that collapse of our markets back in March, I remember having a look at my portfolio and particularly some of my dividend-paying stocks. And I got to say that the stocks in my portfolio with dividends kind of did make the whole thing seem a little less scary, just because dividends give me that more certainty, not just of cash flow, but of quality of those underlying businesses.
Yeah, it certainly does provide an aspect of comfort when there's a huge amount of volatility in markets, as we saw specifically in the early parts of 2020. So it is comforting in cash flow and dividends from a company is more certain. Mm-hmm. It's at the end of the day you receive it annually, and it can certainly help prop up returns and portfolios when markets are volatile. And on top of that, you also get to reinvest that dividend if you're not drawing an income.
Yeah,
and help you accumulate more shares in those dividend paying companies throughout those periods of volatility, which could also lead to improved outcomes from a longer term perspective.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, at my age point, that dividend flow for me is cash flow for reinvesting. At some point, it becomes income. There are a couple of components, and you had a really great note out yesterday around, you know, when we're looking at those companies, what to look for, and it's almost a case of if we're focusing on this, we're going to get the two winners, which is the quality, which is the dividend, and one of them is just that fulfilling a basic need. I mean, examples you use, I mean, you know, Coca-Cola, Nestle. Now the health practitioners will tell us, well, actually, I mean, they've both moved a bit into health, but things which are going to continue being used. I mean, a great one you also refer to, pet food and nappies. You know, we're going to need them regardless what's happening in global economies and stock markets.
Yeah, I think the thing about the great dividend paying companies out there is that they tend to lean towards providing a basic necessity, providing a consumer staple, because it's really providing that need that is timeless, results in such consistent performance. At the end of the day, those consistent dividend payers can only produce that track record because their profitability, the underlying profits, the underlying cash flow is stable and predictable. So your best dividend-paying companies tend to offer something basic, something timeless, something that's not going to be replaced by technology or a new trend or a new fashion. And that really, for us, leads to a huge amount of certainty around the eventual outcome. So dividend stocks are never going to be as racy or as exciting as your tech stocks. If you look at the FANGs, for instance, most of those companies don't pay a dividend. They're in a high growth phase. But I think the variables that can ultimately impact upon the outcome from a longer-term perspective is a lot less. And I think you've got greater probability of producing an acceptable long-term outcome by sticking to the strategy.
And you know, going through stocks mentioned in your note, also just, you know, running through the quality dividend payers locally and globally, the one thing that stands out is they are really, really strong brands. I mean, if we use Coca-Cola as an example, you know, they're not the only cola out there. They've had a ton of competition in the last 100 years. They remain the dominant player. And you know, if we're quite frank about it, in mine and yours lifetime and probably our kids and our grandkids, they're going to remain dominant.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, they have their dominance in their particular markets. You know, in those consumer staple categories, often through the power of their brands, and they've been investing in those brands often for multiple decades, 50 years. In Coca-Cola's instance, they've been around for 100 years. Mm-hmm. And what's so interesting is once they've established that platform, there may be new challenges, but through their brands, they manage to more often than not keep them at bay. So Coca-Cola today still has 50% market share when it comes to non-alcoholic ready-to-drink beverages, which is incredible, half the market. And often people think about Coke as only providing, you know, the black liquid and the red can. They provide everything we drink, just about. They're number one when it comes to sparkling beverages, number one when it comes to fruit juices, number one when it comes to energy juices. They've now made an investment into Costa, which is the third biggest coffee franchise in the world. So they really have ambitions of being the biggest beverage company in the world. Wherever you're drinking, they want to be providing it. And they've got the platform and the distribution network and the brand that enables them to pursue that vision and deliver on that vision consistently.
Yeah, and adapt with the times. I made the mistake up front of talking about Coca-Cola as a, you know, as a non-healthy, but then I remembered, as you mentioned now, that actually, you know, it's carbonated water, it's coffee, and I mean, I couldn't live without my coffee. They can adapt, and that's so hugely important. Dagan Matthews, CEO at Marriott, really appreciate your early morning and helping us talk us through dividends. To my listeners, our poll for this morning, we're bringing our polls back. How important are dividends to you when selecting an investment? Are they very important, somewhat important, or no, not really, not something you look at? You'll find that poll on the MoneyWeb Twitter account at MoneyWeb. Let us know, vote, and give us some feedback. Your views on dividends as an investor. This show is brought to you by Orbvest's latest investment opportunity, Medical 29. It's a multi-tenanted Class A medical office building located in Phoenix, Arizona. For more information, visit orbvest.com. Orbvest SA is an authorized financial services provider, license number 50483. That poll repeat, remember, you'll find it on our Twitter account at MoneyWeb. How important are your dividends when selecting? Very, somewhat, or not really. That's it for today. We're live every weekday morning on the MoneyWeb website and the MoneyWeb app at 6:30 a.m. Podcast available again, website, app, and wherever you get good podcasts, that available from 7 a.m. Huge thanks to my team, Eddie and Cordora, to you for listening, my guests for the early morning contributions. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.